Yo, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to the first Founding Members Club call for this month. We're going on to a totally new topic today. I'm here with, of course, Brad.
What's up, guys?
And with all of you, which is fantastic. We're going to be doing the same kind of layout as normal. If you guys do want to get off the phone by any chance and watch this and listen to it online, you can do so. You have to go back into your email that we sent out recently. I guess it was sent out today. And there's a link in there to listen to this online if you want to do that instead of being on your cell phone or your house phone or whatever it is you're on. So you can do that. You can also post questions in there if you want to. If you have questions here, though, I implore you to press pound, not pound, sorry, don't press pound anything. Press star 2 on your phone and it will raise a digital hand and I will be able to click on you. Looks like somebody just went to the online version just now. Peace, they said. So anyway. So today we're going to be going over a really awesome topic, and that topic is attraction, which is pretty common. I mean, it's most what most guys think they have an issue with. The truth is that most guys do not have an issue with attraction, and it's a very quick and fleeting and very easy to understand sort of system. And if you do sort of get your hands deep in your in this attraction stuff, then you can use it anytime you want to. You can attract anybody you want. But I think first, the most important thing to go over is what attraction actually is. I think we have a specific idea in our heads that we've been taught our whole lives, but attraction is not what we think it is. And I think that the biggest problem that, you know, the layman, the regular man has, say, goes to the bar, the guy who goes to the bar and tries to pick up women without knowing any of this stuff, the biggest problem that he has is that he thinks that attraction is something that it's not. So, you know, for example, thinks that attraction is seduction, or thinks that seduction and attraction are really closely intertwined. So, but they're not. And the sooner that you can understand the difference between the two, the sooner you can control the two and have one work, and if not both, work to your advantage. And that's sort of the point here and what we're trying to get at, what we're trying to get to with today's call, and also with the rest of the month's calls as well. We're going to be teaching you attraction stuff, and then you're going to be going out and doing it and coming back with your feedback. So if you have any questions at all, like I said, either from this call or from the call previous, if you have anything to share or any questions, press star 2, and you can do that now, and you'll start getting in line. As soon as we break for any questions, we'll go ahead and unmute you and chat with you. And again, take advantage of it, because I charge several $100 an hour for phone coaching, and you know, guys are paying me a lot of money just to be able to ask me questions, essentially. So if you want to take advantage of that and really get your dollars worth, then go ahead and press star 2 now, and we'll answer your questions as soon as we can, as soon as we get to them. So without sort of any further ado, I don't want any more ado. No, I don't want any further ado going on here. We're going to jump right into the content for today, because we have a shit ton of content. We have a ton of stuff to go over. It's more than an hour's worth of stuff. I'm going to try to be brief as much as possible, and I'm going to try to be streamlined as much as possible. So if you do have a question, I'm only going to take those questions, you know, whenever I've had designated times to do that, because otherwise we'll break off into a bunch of other stuff and we'll be able to finish the content for today. It's very likely, though, that the call in 2 weeks from now, is it 2 weeks from now? There's a calendar in your members area. By the way, we did launch our new members area. There's a calendar in there. Actually, it's next week. Sorry. Call next week on the 11th at, which is a Thursday at 6 p.m. Pacific, same time. We're going to have another call, and it's very likely that we'll be going over more concepts we didn't have time to go over in this call in that call. So keep that in mind. Definitely show up for the next one as well. Again, this will be recorded, and you can download it for your reference. Check out the new members area. Tell me what you think about that. It's a pretty awesome. I'm really excited about it. I'm very happy. So that's done, which is nice. So let's jump right into to the sort of material for today. If you've read over The Tao of Badass, you'll come sort of run into a concept that is at the core of a lot of the teachings. I've sort of gone over a lot of different psychology in my time so far studying, and most of the psychology I'd run into was kind of, you know, coffee table psychology, meaning it was theory, it wasn't tested, and it didn't make any sense to me. And I tried it out anyway, but, you know, you might imagine it doesn't really work very well. So When I did find something that does work, I tested it furiously, and I tested it every way but sideways, and you know, to see what I could get, to see what would happen, to see if there were some times that it did work, sometimes that it didn't, to see if you know there was something that I could add on to it to make it better, or take off of it to make it more simple. And I came across one concept called the interaction map, and this is originally taken from the idea of sales process. So originally it was, you know, a salesman. So salesmen have had the idea of controlling psychology for a very long time. And the better you were at controlling people and getting people to say yes, the more money you made. So it was tying directly an idea of survival, not just reproduction, but survival, to the idea of making people shake their heads, yes, you know. And so, and stick to that, by the way, not just say yes and then say no afterwards and change your minds. So this idea, it's no surprise, it should be no surprise, that this idea that they use can be easily adapted to, you know, meeting and attracting beautiful women. The only difference is that instead of trying to sell them a car where you have an end goal in mind, you're able to actually take the process and put a pin in it and continue where you left off next time you meet a woman. So if you don't go all the way through, you can drop the conversation, do a little bit of preliminary work to get back to where you were very easily, and continue anytime you want to with women. You can also stop halfway through, and you don't have to sort of quote-unquote make the sale, which in our case might be, you know, getting hooking up with a girl. You know, maybe it's getting laid to a guy. Maybe it's getting a kiss. No matter what it is, getting a relationship. The end result you can always put off till later. When you're selling stuff, you can't really do that. So what we are allowed to do here is we're allowed to take these different parts of this interaction, and we're allowed to break them down into such small categories so that we can understand them and really appreciate each step in the process. And that's what, you know, what this whole interaction map's about. Now, I go into the advanced interaction map, which is sort of my version of it, because, you know, it has to continue all the way through to more advanced stages of an interaction, and not just the sort of preliminary, you know, hey, what's your name kind of parts of the interaction. So attraction is the first of four stages. The four stages are attraction, rapport, seduction, and relationship balance. Attraction, rapport, and seduction were key elements of a sale, like before, building that curiosity, that interest, building that rapport, that connection, and then making the sale, closing, were the ideas from rapport. And a guy named Eric Markovic actually took this and turned it into what you're going to be hearing now, or at least what I based some of the stuff on. It was such a brilliant concept that, and I tried proving it wrong because I didn't want to, you know, base any of my psychology on somebody named Mystery, you know, because I mean, the guy's brilliant though. I really can't say that anything that he says here with this concept, with this interaction map, it is very, very smart and very, very good. So definitely take notes. If you think you've already learned this information, write it down anyway, because we're going to be going into a lot of really cool details that I don't go over very often, and usually only go over in my in-person courses. So, and you do have the option to raise your hand. Like I said, press star 2 and you can raise your hand at any moment. And that will allow you to sort of, you know, get us to elaborate on whatever specific question you have, or, you know, get us to comment on a specific situation that you've been in, and so on and so forth. So first, let's go into, I'll sort of break down the different stages of attraction. So attraction is broken down into three different parts. The sort of approach or the introduction stage, which is the very first part. The demonstrating your value or demonstrating high value, which is the second part. And then qualifying, which is the third part. This is almost directly connected to sales, like I was saying. This is almost a direct borrow from the sales process. So what you're going to be doing is you're going to be not using this per se by the book in the very beginning. Your first goal is to be able to see this happening as it's happening. This is called seeing the matrix, quote unquote. So I just did air quotes, but you can't see it. But Brad thinks I'm making bunny ears, but I'm not. They're air quotes. So you want to make sure that you can recognize this as it's happening in the moment, because whenever you recognize it and you know what's coming next, you know how to get to the next step. This is the biggest realization for me in the beginning, sort of beginning to study this. One of the biggest, like, holy shit, this is actually working moments, besides my realization that I can tell people that I'm hot and they'll believe it, was that I remember I was studying this and studying it and studying it. And then one day it just, you know, I think this is, I've heard this used sort of in a similar phrase often, is that one day I walk into a bar And I look around, and for some reason, everything just clicked. And I don't know why. All of a sudden, it started working. But it did. And it just rocked. You know, all of a sudden, I could look over, and I could tell exactly who was attracted to whom and which women were available, which women would be attracted to which kind of approach. It was all really amazing. And that's why it's called Seeing the Matrix, because it's very much like, you know, when Neo can see the Matrix, he understands he can control it. So as soon as you can sort of see this happening, you realize that you have a power that no one else in the entire place has power over. And that is, you can see what stage they're in, and you can see how to get them to the next stage. And they don't see that themselves. So it's very, very, very powerful. And that's why I wanted to go over it today in sort of a lot of detail. And this is why it's sort of some of the backbones of a lot of processes psychologically, but in this case, we're going to be using this as a way to break down and hack the interaction that you're going to be having with women moving forward. So the real first question, I guess, is what is attraction? Most guys think that attraction is sexual in nature. It's not sexual in nature. Seduction is sexual in nature. Attraction is curiosity. It's very important that you reframe this. And if you thought it was anything else, like women wanting to sleep with you, women wanting to know more about you, women wanting to connect with you, these are three very, very different things. But as men, we tend to think that they're all the same. You know, if a girl wants to sleep with us, we automatically think that she wants to know more about us. If she wants to know more about us, we automatically think, well, she must want to sleep with us. And that's not true. And in fact, jumping to that stage too soon kills the attraction, and then she'll walk off. If you've ever been like talking to a girl, things were going great, and then as soon as you recognize she's attracted to you, you notice like almost magically that the attraction starts to drop off. She starts to be less interested in you. She starts to get distracted with other things. She wants to talk to other people, and she eventually just turns around and walks off or excuses herself and never comes back. Well, the reason why this happens is because as soon as you recognize that she's attracted to you, all men have this natural desire to jump straight to seduction, sort of procreate immediately, which makes complete sense biologically, but does not make sense socially. So women don't have that desire to jump straight to sex. Instead, you know, they're a lot more vulnerable. Men are typically bigger, they're stronger, they have more power, they have more control. And if a woman chooses a man unwisely, sort of foolishly, then it could mean serious bodily harm to her. It could mean serious, it could mean death, actually, to her. So, or if not death, then serious psychological and maybe even physical scarring. So women have a lot more of you know, they're a lot more safe around this concept, most women. And if they're not safe around this concept, it's really frowned on by other women. Women call those kinds of women sluts. And men love those women. Because they don't care. You know, they try to jump straight to seduction, which is what most men do. So what we want to do instead is we want to be the top 2% of men who recognize that seduction is later and attraction is first. And attraction is purely curiosity. Now, I've used this kind of way to describe this before, sort of in the past when I'm describing other things. But when you're a child and you learn to communicate, the first way that you learn to communicate is through body language. And body language is subconscious in the beginning, because your subconscious mind hasn't fully formed yet. So your subconscious is doing all the heavy lifting for you, in fact, all the lifting. And one of the easiest ways to do this is through mimicking. So we start mimicking first. You know, we realize that someone reaches over and they grab something with their hand, so we reach over to get it too with our hands, and then eventually we just, you know, point our arm at the thing that we want and then scream, right? Mine or whatever. So what ends up happening here is we realize, okay, well, if I point my arm in that direction and don't just look at it or don't just want it, if I point my arm, I get better results. Like I actually get the thing that I want more often. So I get to communicate that to people. And so what we end up doing eventually is we go from pointing our arm to pointing our fingers in a straight kind of way or making a grabbing motion. And then finally we learn how to move our pointy fingers. Now this is really amazing because in the beginning we think that our hand is just one big muscle and it moves on its own. Like we want something, we move it over here, move our hand over and we flex it in and out, and all we can do is move all of our fingers at the same time. But eventually we get what's called acute muscle awareness. And this is where we learn how to move one of our fingers, one tiny finger, you know, pointy finger. and then we point at something, and it's a lot more effective. So this is sort of the same thing. You're going to be separating the stage of attraction into three smaller substages. And by doing this, you're going to have acute attraction awareness. That's acute meaning specific, not like adorable. So you're going to have very specific and very sharp attraction awareness, and you'll be able to tell the difference between someone in the first stage of attraction versus someone in the latter stages of attraction, which knowing the difference between those two parts of attraction can mean the difference between moving forward and getting a drink thrown in your face, or a back turned to you, or you know, having a guy pulled in, you know, and saying, you know, having someone asking her, you know, her asking someone to save her, you know, that kind of thing. So it can be a massive difference. And if you know how, you know, which stage you're in, you can jump to the end of the attraction phase and you can start there. And if it doesn't work, go backwards and do the work again and move forward. So you can actually start to bend the rules. You can sort of dodge bullets if you want to use the Matrix sort of analogy again. So that's what we're going to do. So attraction then is curiosity. It's not seduction. It's not connection. It's not keeping the relationship together. Of course, it's curiosity and that's it. If you're curious about anybody at all, then you're attracted to them. That's what curiosity is. Now, I know it sounds kind of crazy and this may sound weird, but with this definition of attraction, you are also attracted to other dudes. I know this is weird, but just hear me out on this. I just saw 10 people drop off the call. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. No one's off the call. But essentially, the idea is that if attraction is curiosity, you can be attracted to anything or anyone. In fact, when you meet a guy who's awesome, like a really cool guy, you are going through the stage of attraction with that guy. You're going through these stages of, hey, this guy's cool, you know? I wanna talk to this guy more. I wonder if he's like lives near me. I'd like to hang out with him. Like, this is the beginning stages. This is the curiosity stage. And during this stage, all you're trying to do is get them more curious about you. Now, the difference between you being attracted or interested or curious in a guy, curious about a guy, and the way that you're curious about women is that you push the interaction forward with women and you don't push the interaction forward with men. Instead, you get the rapport quickly, as fast as you can, and then you chill there. Then you bounce between rapport and the attraction phase, the curiosity, like the bullshitting, joking around phases, and the rapport phase, and you bounce between those two for basically the entirety of your interaction with that friend. And that's what makes a friend. Now, the same exact two stages are with women. The only difference is you're doing it with a purpose with women. You're attempting to move beyond the rapport phase, so you have to hit all the phases in the beginning of the attraction phase first in order to make it happen. So whereas you may be a little more relaxed, you know, making friends with the guy, you're going to be a little bit more aware of what's going on whenever you are using these phases with women. So with that in mind, the curiosity stage has to be reframed. You can't think that attraction is sexual in nature, because it's not. And if you find that, you know, you're curious about a woman because she's hot, that's fine. That's totally fine. But the curiosity is what we're focusing on. The biggest mistake that I see men make is they skip the first two stages of an interaction. They jump straight to seduction. You know, as men, we try to get to that third stage as fast as possible. So now let's talk a little bit about what men are attracted to. Men are typically attracted to looks. We are attracted to sociobiological traits, meaning, you know, breasts, ass, you know, ass and titties, you know, you know, for lack of a better phrase. And that is essentially what we're attracted to as men. We're attracted to that. We're also attracted to certain body language movements, personality traits. We're also attracted to, interestingly enough, it turns out we're attracted to people who have the same insecurity level as us. And so, but we'll get into that in a different call someday and how to actually use that to your advantage. But ultimately, we're attracted to things that are very surface level as men. We're not very complex. We're not very hard to figure out, really, in general. It's pretty surface and pretty straightforward. Now, as you get more aware of different types of women and you meet lots and lots and lots of women, your taste begins to change, but the things that you notice first don't. You still notice the same qualities in women. Now, women, however, are attracted to a very different thing in men. Women are attracted to confidence, humor. Those are the two biggest ones, to be honest. If we start getting into psychology, it'd be more of leadership, dominance but not domineering actions in body language, things like this. And so essentially, we are sort of struggling to demonstrate those different qualities as men, and all of our entire society is focused around trying to demonstrate these specific qualities that we think women like. Now, the problem is most of us don't actually know what women like. We think that we know what women want, but, you know, we're not gay, so we don't know what makes an attractive man. We just don't know that. We're not born with that. If you're attracted to men, then, well, yeah, you can tell the difference. But if you're not, you're kind of shit out of luck here, you know? You're left to sort of ask other dudes who don't know shit about it, or to ask women who will tell you things that they think are what they're attracted to, but really almost never what they're actually attracted to. Because they're not just thinking about giving you the answer, they're also thinking about protecting themselves during the process and not looking like a slut or whatever. So they end up giving really skewed advice to men. So what is it that women are truly attracted to? Let's take a really common thought. I think most men think that women are attracted to money, right? So that makes sense. But let's talk about why it is that women would ever be attracted to money in the first place. What is it about money that would make a woman attracted? I mean, it doesn't, I mean, guys aren't good looking. 99% of the time, the guys who have a lot of money are terrible, you know? Overweight. They've been sitting at a desk forever, so they don't look very good. I mean, they don't look like put together. But why are women still attracted to them? Well, what we've found out sort of focusing on this, what makes women attracted, what truly makes women attracted to men, is that we have sort of worked, reverse engineered this idea of why money is attractive. And it turns out women aren't actually attracted to guys with money. They're attracted to guys who present the qualities of a man who has money. Now, this is very, very important. That means that you don't actually have to have money. You have to have the qualities of a man that has money. Now, what are these qualities? So what women do is women like men, let's say that women like men who have money. Let's say that money's an indicator of confidence, right? That's what women tend to think, though it's truly not an indicator of confidence. I think women are finding that out more and more now than ever. But it's commonly believed that, you know, if you have a lot of money, you must be pretty confident because you can do whatever you want to. So let's look at this. Let's kind of reverse engineer this. If you have a lot of money, that means that you're getting paid a lot for whatever purpose, whatever reason that means. If you're getting paid a lot of money, it means that you're probably needed within a group of people, right? You're a necessary part of a group. If you're a necessary part of a group, it usually means that you are in some sort of a leadership position, meaning people are following you. Your time is worth more because more people rely on your time, so you get paid more money. So if people are if you're leading people, it means people are following you. If people are following you, it means people believe in you, right? People need you around. Now, what is it that you're giving people that would force them to need you around? And the answer to this question is not what people think, not the most common or obvious answer. The truth is that you hang around people who have what's called value. You hang around people and you follow people who you believe make you more valuable as a person. This means that women are ultimately looking at money as an indicator of value as a man. Meaning, if you can make people happy that are around you, people will follow you because you're a source of their happiness, and they don't even know how to create their own happiness, so of course they're going to follow you. If you can create people's happiness, then people will follow you. People follow you, you become a leader. You become a leader, you become sort of in a managerial position or a high up position in a business because everyone needs you. I.e. you get paid a lot of money, you get more money, and now you have the quality that women, you know, look at to see whether or not this guy's going to be actually truly confident. So you can bypass all of that shit if you can just show a quality of giving value, of making people happy, essentially. If you can make other people around you feel good for in one way or another, then people will follow you, and you can bypass all these triggers that women have, and you'll go straight to the visceral connection, the visceral attraction, which is the value, the concept of value, which we'll go into in a lot greater detail, probably over several calls, because it's a really, really huge topic to go into. So let's sort of break down how it is that we're going to be demonstrating this value to a woman during the attraction phase, and what to do and what not to do, and sort of go into the three different stages. Again, the three different stages are introduction, demonstrating high value, and qualifying. So let's go over the first part first, and this is sort of the biggest. When I was getting a hold of the system and found it for the first time, I found the biggest discrepancy within this first little part of attraction, And that is, most guys think that the first stage is when you approach a girl, but it's not the first stage. The first stage is whenever you become a blip on the radar of people that exist in the world to them. Meaning, once she looks at you, hears about you, hears of you, hears you talking, sees you on TV, sees you in a YouTube video, sees you on Facebook, sees you in a bar, whatever her first impression of you, that first immediate moment is your introduction to her. Now, that may sound kind of crazy because you're not actually doing anything, but what women are doing and what men do as well is that when we see somebody, we make a blink decision based on their current state that we can spread across all of our interactions with them and is extremely accurate. Some people are better at this than others. Women tend to be better at this than men, but it is sort of what people call your intuition, so to speak. It's not technically intuition, but it is just as powerful as intuition. And essentially what it does is whenever we see somebody for the first time, we gather an inexorbitant amount of information, just like tons and tons and tons of information about this person in that exact moment, how they're moving their body, how they're smiling, if they're smiling, how they move their eyes, where they're looking, are they leaning in, are they leaning out, are the people around them interacting positively, are people trying to get their attention. And there's all these different factors that our subconscious minds are taking in all at one time. And what we do is we try as fast as possible to put this person into a folder in our brains. Once we put them in a folder, we know who they are, we don't have to think about them anymore, right? And women do this to men all the time. Now, curiosity sort of forces women to not find that folder. That's what it is. If you look one thing and act another thing, or act in a way that she's never encountered, or if you seem rare as a man, she won't put you in a folder yet. She'll explore you further. And her desire to explore you further is attraction, curiosity. That's what it is. So, but on the flip side, it's the negative side. If you start out with poor body language, with poor interactions with people around you, if you're reactive, if you meaning that you are reacting to everyone else instead of sort of leading the interaction, that could mean that you get upset, you get angry, you get emotional, or that you're sort of trying to get approval from the people that you're around, and you're constantly following people around trying to get their attention. This is a very unattractive quality. And so what ends up happening is women put you in an unattractive category in their minds. And since you're in that category, it's extremely difficult to get out of it. You can get out of it, of course. If you know the system pretty well, you can jump right out. But it's better never to get in it in the first place. I would never say to you that it's a better idea for you to dig yourself out of a hole with a woman, sort of start off on a bad foot and then work your way up to getting up to normal again after that. If you have the ability to automatically attract in the beginning, you want to take that ability and you want to capitalize on it as much as possible. So ultimately, you want to start out really positively and start out with a really good sense of attraction. And the way that you do that typically is through your body language. There are lots of different ways that you can do it. Ultimately, if you have the Founding Members Club, it's likely and necessary that you have the Tao of Badass. So if you log into the members area to see the Tao of Badass, you should have those credentials within your inbox from whenever you first got a hold of the product in the first place. Then you can go in there and you'll see different parts, different things I have written on body language. And if you're lucky enough to get the 5-week body language mastery course, then you can go in there and you'll see the button for it. If you haven't seen that, watch it, because it is a massive lesson. It's actually 6 weeks long of webinars that I produced on body language mastery. And if you understand that and you abide by those rules while you are just sort of going through your everyday life, then you will automatically attract women more often. Recently, I just produced a video on how to walk and attract women. When you log in, I think that's not up yet, but we'll have to put it up here in the next couple of days.
Actually, yeah, it is. It's
in the resources section. Okay, so if you go to the resources tab at the top of the website, whenever you log in, when you're logging in the members area, you'll see that there's a link there. You can click on it and you can see different in-depth videos of me explaining things from the book. And one of those is on how to walk. Now, how to walk essentially makes really good use of your introduction mechanism for women. It allows you to walk and use dominant and attractive body language while you're in your everyday life, because women are seeing you engaging whether or not you're attractive in that moment. And if they are, and they think that you're attractive, then at that moment, they'll continue to be interested and curious in you, and they'll continue to push forward through this map of interaction. If not, then you have a very difficult road ahead of you, and you're sort of sending mixed signals to women, and most women will ignore mixed signals because they feel that they're inauthentic, they're not real, that if your body's saying one thing and your mouth is saying another, that you're probably a liar and you're probably very insecure as a man. Because it makes sense, that's true, and it's called incongruence. If your verbal language is something like, oh, hey, you know, I'm awesome, people think I'm hot, and I'm hot shit, and you should like me, but your body language is all weak and frail and small, it's going to seem like you're faking that, like that's not real. And women will call you out on it because it's their jobs to filter you out. Men have what's called an approach mechanism, and women have what's called a filter mechanism. Your approach mechanism forces you to feel the need to talk to women all the time that you are attracted to. Now, women don't have that need as much, so they have instead what's called a filter mechanism, where they feel the need to filter out men constantly who aren't truly attractive or aren't truly confident. So it's their job to filter you out. It's your job to approach them. And so if you want to best all the other guys, you're going to have to figure out how to get through these filters and how to come out the other side smelling like roses. And one way to do that is to never seem like somebody in any kind of part of your body language, verbal language or body language or a vocal tonality, anything. You know, not seem like you are an unattractive guy in any way, shape, or form. So they never get that idea going through their heads in the first place. Another thing you can get into is smiling. Smiling is, we really could have an entire, and probably will have an entire webinar on smiling moving forward. But ultimately, it is one of the most powerful tools at your disposal because it does a lot of really great and amazing psychological things to people when they encounter your smile in the first place. It's a really hard thing to get used to doing if you haven't done it all the time, because as men, we're kind of taught to be tough and hard and not smile all the time, and because it seems like we get taken advantage of. But if you use your smile selectively, especially while you're walking for no apparent reason, you can really beam out this this positive, attractive quality that most women are looking for in men. Brad, I know you did some research a while ago on smiles, and I know you have a bunch of stuff that you'd like to say about that. Now, I'd really love to get your input and your insights on that.
Yeah, this is actually, it's really fascinating. I discovered a TED Talk on smiling a while back, and basically how smiling is a superpower that we don't really realize it. And, you know, the speaker presented a lot of information from different psychological studies, from anywhere from the fact that you can predict someone's lifespan by actually seeing how well and how often they smile. Mm-hmm. So they looked at a series of yearbooks, and the people who in their yearbook picture had a bright, you know, wide smile lived to be about 80 years old, whereas people who had just a slight smile lived to be about 75, and the people who didn't smile at all, on average, lived to be about 70. So that's like a whole 10 years difference. And to me, that just says that, you know, their overall quality of life is better. You know, their stress levels are lower, and the things that we generally associate with
early death.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Like being a guy. typically don't outlive women.
So another thing that I found really fascinating is that Charles Darwin actually came up with what he called the facial feedback response theory. And that is basically saying that the act of smiling itself produces positive response in our minds. So basically, we feel better when we're smiling, just physically. And we also feel better when we see others smiling. So if you think about that in the context of going out to a bar or something, if somebody happens to be, you know, not quite having a great night so far, and you smile at them, it's just naturally going to put them in a better mood. They can't help it. I mean, we're programmed to have a positive response to other people smiling.
Right. I think that one of the things that I sort of to hit on that note, actually, one of the things that I did that I think a lot of guys didn't do that sort of separated me from other guys, and feel free to try this yourselves when you go out, is that I learned how to laugh in public. It was really hard for me to do. I mean, I had to train myself to be okay with laughing at jokes. You know, like, for example, if we go to a bar and someone is telling me something funny, I used to hear it, I would think it was funny, and I just wouldn't laugh that much because, you know, it was funny, but I didn't laugh too much.
Seemed out of place.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't even have a word for it. Like, I didn't even have an explanation like that. I just didn't laugh, you know? I'd go, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, or something like that. I'd be like, oh, that's pretty funny. But now what I do is I kind of let myself give in to the laugh. I let myself laugh. So I'm not faking it at all. I just don't hold it back anymore. And I found that whenever I did that, when I started just laughing at a bar, at something, even if, you know, another guy walks up, he says something, I'm laughing really hard, I get approached way more. Like, women come and approach me way more whenever I laugh. Because, you know, think about this. Think if you saw two women standing next to each other. One is got, like, just a normal no expression on her face, and one is laughing, and they're both right next to each other, and they look exactly the same. Which one are you going to approach? You're going to approach the laughing girl. You are automatically going to. And the reason why is because you have less chance for rejection, you know? Less chance that she's going to go from laughing to being pissed off at you, you know? And that's what we do. We do that all the time. You look around in the room, and this is probably one of the best ways to gauge who to approach first in a bar and who's going to be most receptive. If girls are laughing in a group and you walk up and you're willing to laugh with them, then you're going to be accepted. It's going to happen, and you're going to be accepted very well. So, you know, you want to make sure that you spend the time to laugh as much as possible and get comfortable with laughing and smiling. One of the things that we teach is smiling when you first walk into a bar. As soon as you walk in, it's very important that people see you smiling. Because like I said, they're going to get that first impression of you. And in that moment, this is not just a bar. I say a bar because a bar is probably the hardest place to go into to attract women. I mean, it's really, really difficult place to go. Besides maybe, I don't know, an AA meeting, which might be more difficult, which might happen if you go to the bar too much. But ultimately, I mean, I would go to the bar all the time because it was kind of like the Shaolin temple. You know, you go there to train. You go there because it's difficult. You know, a club is very, very hard. You know, daytime, though, it's a lot easier to go smile at people during the daytime. So if you can do this at night, you can do it anytime. You have a choice to do it anytime you want to. And that's kind of, you know, why I say a bar. But it could be anywhere. It could be a bookstore. It could be a friend's party. You know, it could be anywhere really at all, on the street, anything.
Something really great that you touched on is that if you do smile and you're having a blast and you're laughing out loud at a bar especially, you're going to be in a small percentage of men to begin with. Because generally, guys, it seems to me that guys go out with this attitude of, like, you know, being serious.
You know why? Because guys go out thinking immediately they're going to be competing for girls. You know, and that's why they go out serious, because they want to be tough. They want other guys to be intimidated. But if you're thinking about competing with girls when you go out, it means you think you have to compete for women, which means you don't think you're going to get them unless you compete. You know, guys who are really good with women do not think about, it doesn't even cross their minds that they're going to be competing with guys, because no one competes with them. They just go up and they get whoever they want in the end. You know, so that's how women look at men, and they go, well, if he's smiling and he's having a good time, he's not trying to be a tough dude and compete with other dudes for women, meaning that he probably gets women anytime he wants to. And that's something that, you know, I've seen the direct response from this. I mean, it's direct. Try going out to one bar or one spot one night, walk in the door not smiling, and I mean smile with your eyes, like fully smile, you know. Try not smiling in one spot, and then try walking into another spot later on and try smiling and watch the difference. It's phenomenal, you know. You can even try walking into the first place smiling and then walking to the second place not smiling. And even if you're more tipsy, you know, it's easier to approach women, whatever. If you're not smiling, it's not going to go over as well, because people will see you walk in the door and they will see you smiling. Women will see this. Even if it's in their periphery and they're not directly looking at you, they're still logging all this information subconsciously. And they'll say, not interested in whatever's going on over there. You know, I'm not interested in whoever just walked in the door. Or they'll say, huh, it's kind of curious. And they'll look over at you. And they'll go, huh, that guy's kind of attractive. You know, I hope he comes and talks to me later, or whatever, which is usually what they will think. And then it's your job to go do that. So anyway, I don't mean to hijack you there, Brad.
No, that actually reminds me of a... Well, I'll tell you guys because, you know, I know I can trust you with this. But basically, the first girl that I had a one-night stand with, and, you know, I mean that in the most awesome way. She's an amazing person. We had a really great time. But it happened because I was out at a bar with a group of my friends, and I looked back to her. She was sitting down being bored on a date, actually. And I just smiled at her. She was cute, and I just smiled at her and turned back around and started talking to my friends. And about 15 minutes later, she comes up to me and says, "Hi." You know? And basically, you know, after we were talking later, she said, "I couldn't believe that you actually smiled at me. Most guys don't do that at the bar."
I know, it's nuts.
And I was like, "Seriously? You're so adorable, you know? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't I smile at you?" Mm-hmm. She goes, "Yeah, it really doesn't happen." Mm-hmm. And I was, and that was like, I mean, that started the whole thing. And
she said, "Now let me sit on your cock."
It went exactly like that, actually.
And he said, "Let's get out of harm's way first. Let's go into the bathroom." Let's
so I will say that I've seen very direct results, and so direct that she was aware of it, you know, very acutely. Like she knew that guys typically don't smile at a bar, even though she's very attractive and she knows guys are attracted to her. Mm-hmm. They just don't smile. So smile, guys. It's really powerful.
Right. You had something really cool that you told me about earlier that was sort of the level of endorphin rush that it gives people whenever you see someone smile at you.
Yeah, this is awesome. So yeah, smiling just physically increases endorphins, which make you feel better.
It's sort of like if you get a really happy rush, like uncontrollably ecstatic or excited or happy, that's what an endorphin rush feels like. Sort of like waiting for Christmas / Hanukkah / Kwanzaa, whatever. Waiting for your birthday presents, or waiting to meet somebody really awesome, or anything like that. All these different feelings that we have increase endorphins in our system, and that's what it feels like. So I just want to
say that. So a group of British researchers found that a single smile generates the same amount of positive stimulations and endorphin increases as eating 2,000 chocolate bars, which is known to increase endorphins, or it was the equivalent of being given $25,000 in cash, if you can believe it. So
it's nuts. Super high. I mean, if you can imagine the feeling that you would get walking and seeing $25,000 in cash rolled up on the ground and then picking it up and getting it for free, you know, that sort of fluttery feeling that you'd have. It creates the same intensity of that feeling in someone else that you're smiling at. So very, very, very crucial to use this superpower sort of at your, you know, it's at your disposal to use it at your advantage whenever you're out. And, you know, there are other guys there that you have to, you know, like, I don't want to say compete because you're not really competing. But, you know, if other guys are there and you're thinking, well, I gotta be the best guy I can possibly be so I can get the best woman that I want here, then you want to use this to your advantage. You want to use this power because no one else is really going to be using it. And the guys who do use it, watch them. I mean, they clean up. They kill it, you know, because they know how to do it.
So. And really, smiling in an environment like that is another way of being vulnerable, if you think about it.
It is. Well, that's why most guys don't do it, is because we have an association with being vulnerable and being weak. But the truth is, it's exactly the opposite. Actually, that's a really good point, and I'll go over this right now. I haven't gone over this lately, and haven't talked about it very much lately either, so I'd love to chat about it for a second. There's something I realized, and it was just sort of subconscious in the beginning. I studied Kung Fu for 6 years, and I got pretty far into it, like 8 hours a day, 6 days a week for a while, and which is way too much. But I did anyway, and it was very, very big for me. And I realized there's a pattern that I noticed, and that is the guys who are the most badass, you know, when they're about to fight, they stand in the way that's most open, like open to attack. Now, this might not be the same when they're facing people who they know are just as good as they are, because they're guarded. But when they're fighting someone random, they just assume that they're better, so they try to entice somebody to attack. Some of the best boxers would leave spaces open to sort of bait people in to swing so they could, you know, get a find an opening and get them. And it's a really powerful and very masterful skill. Now, I thought that that was really interesting when I started going around and approaching women and talking to women for the first time, women that I didn't know. I found that I had a very strong desire to be guarded as I did it. And I remembered that, and I tried turning that off once. And I remember the first time I did this, I was in a bar in, no, I wasn't. I was in a cafe, actually, in North Carolina. And I was just hanging out, and I went over to a group of girls that I was sitting at a table, and I started talking to them. And I went straight into a story. I was like, oh, my desire here is to be that cool guy, sit back, you know, not say much and whatever, and wait till they're done talking and talk to them and ask them questions and whatever and see if they wanted to hang out later. But instead, I went into a story of something that embarrassed me, something that I just didn't really – I wouldn't normally tell somebody that I just met. And I just got amazing responses. No one attacked me once. And this is one of the first times I realized. And then I started testing it. And I thought that for sure I was going to say it and someone was going to go, that's stupid. You're stupid and I hate you. You know, like something like I would hear in middle school or elementary school. But it didn't happen. Everyone was very, very open. And what I ended up finding out is that if you walk into a venue with the idea of being completely open with your body language, with your verbal language, everything, with everything about you being completely honest and open, then people are too afraid to attack you because they think that you're a badass. This is a total mindfuck here. What people see is they see, you know, the equivalent of everybody else with a shield and a sword running around attacking each other. Like, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? You know, you open up first. No, you open up first, you know? And if you walk straight up and you open up, it's the equivalent of someone walking in the middle of a battlefield with no weapons, casually strolling. It's just scary to people. And they don't want to fuck with you. So they don't. And if they did want to, if they were fucking with everybody else, what they end up doing is they go, well, this guy's unarmed. And this shield and this sword are really heavy. So I'm just going to put it down. And they start opening up too. And then all of a sudden, you have a group of people around you that haven't opened up in 10 years to anybody. They've just met you for the past 5 minutes, and they're already telling you stuff about them that they've never told anyone. And that's amazing. That's really, really, really powerful. So definitely, you know, I wanted to hit on that. It's a really, really good point. You know, and smiling is a way to disarm everybody, because you can't have your shield up and smile at the same time. It doesn't work, you know? And if you're faking the smile, people, there's been a study on micro expressions. I forget, unfortunately, I forget who did the study. It was in a book. I think it was in Blink, or it was in Freakonomics or something. One of those pop psychology books that are pretty fun to read. And it went into, I think it was in Blink, and it went into the idea of someone who was studying minor microscopic sort of expressions in people. And they were watching married couples. And they had broken down the facial movements into something like 45 different movements that we make in combination with each other. So it's tons and tons and tons and tons of different expressions. And they found one expression that they saw this expression one time during an argument or a conversation between two couples. They could predict pretty accurately, with like 80% accuracy, that their relationship would fall apart in the next 2 years. And it was really, really accurate. And that that facial expression was one of resentment. That ended up being the facial expression that ruined relationships. Resent, you know, being resentful of the person that you're with. So we pick up on these so subconsciously that we're not even aware of them. So this sort of study of micro expressions led us to understand that when you fake a smile, people can tell the difference because your subconscious mind is registering all the tiny movements that your face is making, and it's going, that doesn't make any sense. You know, I don't know why, but that person looks like they're faking their smile. So you can't fake it. The best way to do it is to actually think of something that makes you smile. I used to do a couple things. I had a friend who turned me on to thinking about Peter Griffin's laugh from Family Guy before I walked in, right as I was walking through the door. You know, like the that thing. And I would picture that. I would listen to that in my head, like hear it in my head, right as I was walking into a bar. And it would make me just sort of smirk in this funny kind of honest way. Another thing I used to do is, and this is kind of silly, this is something I did, I'd imagine that all of my organs had smiley faces and they were all laughing. I don't know why that made me laugh, but it did. It made me smile. And it was like really silly, but it did it for me. Whatever works for you that makes you smile genuinely is worth your time. It's worth your effort, and it's worth doing right as soon as you walk into a bar. So like right as you're walking through the door, you just want to think of that, whatever your version of Peter Griffin laughing, or, you know, your organs smiling or whatever. I should post something. I found this really funny picture of a rib cage with a face on it, and all the ribs were hands, and it was hugging all the organs, and the organs are all smiling, you know, like snuggling together.
That's creepy.
It was really funny. It was a drawing, a cartoon drawing. Okay. It does sound kind of creepy, I guess. Carved. No, but it was the cartoon drawing, so it was really funny, and I should post that somewhere in the members area. But ultimately, that's what I used to think of, and it used to help me beam out this like really amazing facial expression to people that they didn't see very often. And women will pick up on this. It's very, very important that you know that, because they will pick up on it.
I have a pretty powerful suggestion for that too. Just recently, if you're familiar with Pandora, the internet radio station, they started adding comedians. So now you can search for comedians, and it'll create a station where it just will keep coming up with new bits from recorded stand-up. And basically, I just have that playing in my iPhone all day. So I'm just beaming smiles. I mean, I've been doing it for a good, you know, about a week now. And I can't help but just be smiling and laughing as I'm just walking down the street or whatever.
That's a great idea. Especially if you're on default and you have your headphones in. Instead of just like mindlessly listening to music, you can put on Pandora or... If you have a Mac, I mean, I don't normally tell people about this, but if you have a Mac, you can get something called Pandora Jam. And I don't know if they're still selling it or not. For a while, they would allow you to, basically, as you're playing Pandora, it would put whatever you're listening to in your iTunes. I mean, it's amazing. So if you could do that, you could get a playlist of funny things you'd heard and just like let it run overnight and wake up and have 100 funny comedian things on your computer. Or, you know, if you have 3G on your phone and you can use it while you're walking around, then you can, you know, you can just set it up so that you are listening to it while you're walking down the street and you'll be laughing. But it's much, much better to do that, to, you know, and to have a sort of a steady flow of funny things or lighthearted things in your mind, so that whenever you do come in contact with someone or someone looks at you for the first time and they sort of get that first introduction impression of you, you're starting out on the right foot. You're starting out from a place of attraction and not from a place of, you know, well, tough dude or insecure or worse, like the nice guy who's like, oh, I'm really sensitive and I want to hear more about, you know, I want to hear more about you, because I think if you talk about you enough, eventually you'll suck my dick, you know, which is what most guys think. I ran into this one guy in a bar in New York once. He's an older guy, and older guys love to tell me when they found out what I did, love to tell me how to meet women. Like, as soon as they find out what I did, they're like, I'm going to tell you what I do. I'm like, okay, man, I'll listen. I'm totally down for listening. So this one guy, he goes, I'll tell you how to do that. It's really easy. All you do is you sit down at the bar and you just ask them a question and you sound super interested. After 30 minutes of that, ask her if she wants to go home with you. This was this guy's technique, you know? And that's what he would do, because he's like, oh, this works for me all the time. Then this is what I'll do. And so he did that, and I guess it worked. I mean, I assume that most guys are lying when they say stuff works, because I know a lot of guys that lie about how much they get laid. Especially a dude at a bar that you don't know who's volunteering the information. He probably doesn't get laid very often. You know, he's probably not that good. The guys who are really good are out talking to girls, not sitting alone at the bar, you know. But ultimately, you know, that's sort of like, you know. We all think that that's like the idea. The idea is that I keep talking enough, and then eventually ask her about herself enough, she'll be like, oh, I convinced her to come sleep with me now. And that's not really the case. So definitely important that you understand the power of the introduction. The next stage, though, is where most guys think that they have a problem, and that is demonstrating high value. Now, when I got a hold of this process, it was demonstrating higher value, which I thought was really, really misleading and a bad way to think about things, because essentially it says, I'm comparing myself to somebody. Usually you're comparing yourself to the girl, and that means that you don't think you're attractive. So you're automatically walking up thinking, how do I make myself more attractive than this girl, because I don't think that I'm attractive currently. And she's not going to like me unless you know, she thinks that I'm more attractive than she is or something. And you end up just starting off from a place of comparing yourself and putting her on sort of a pedestal and trying to be convincing enough to get her to like you. That doesn't work, because... attraction, demonstrating high value, is not really just demonstrating high value, it's demonstrating non-neediness. And if you need her to like you, you're going to demonstrate neediness constantly, and it won't work. It'll kill the attraction. So ultimately, you want to demonstrate non-neediness, meaning that you don't need her to interact with you, but you like it, so you're going to keep doing it, essentially. That's the mindset that you want to have past sort of when you first start to actually interact with her in some kind of capacity. When you're talking, whenever you're looking over at her, when you're dancing, whatever it is that you're doing first, as a first sort of introduction to her, you want to do that from a place of non-neediness. And the reason why is because non-neediness sort of projects not disinterest, because disinterest is being not interested. You can be interested but not needy. So non-neediness sort of projects a knowledge of an abundance of choices, meaning that if you don't need this interaction to go well and you don't need her to sleep with you, it probably means that you get laid often. And that's why you don't need her to like you. Now, it doesn't mean you're going to be a dickhead. That's being uninterested. But being non-needy means that you're going to still interact and be nice and be positive and everything cool and funny and joke around and stuff. But if she turns her back to you all of a sudden, you're not going to try to chase after her and get her attention, things like that. And also, you won't be afraid to turn your back as well. So if you have if you think you have a lot of options, then it probably means that other women are interested in you, which sort of means that you're what's called pre-selected or pre-qualified to be an attractive guy. The odd thing is that women are attracted to other men that other women are attracted to, almost exclusively. Women like certain qualities in men, but the most amazing quality is the quality that other women are attracted to this guy. If you can project that to a woman when you first meet her, then 99% of the work is done, to be honest. And they'll be curious about you in the beginning to want to know more. And then after that, you have to continue to build rapport and sort of jump into seduction then. But ultimately, you want to make sure that she knows, not that she finds out or is convinced or that she believes, but that she actually just knows. She gets a feeling that other women must like you. If you've ever heard a woman say, "I bet you're good with women," to you before, then that's like the ultimate comment from a woman, or ultimate compliment rather, from a woman. It essentially is stating that you're pre-qualified, you're pre-selected as a man. It means that you are truly an attractive guy if she thinks other girls are attracted to you. It doesn't mean, most guys hear that and they think, oh, well, they add this to the end of it subconsciously. I bet a lot of girls like you. And then they add subconsciously, but I don't. that's what we think as guys. But that's not what women are saying when they say that. They may even be trying to put a mask over their interest because they don't want to come across as being needy, of course, or too clingy in the beginning, or desperate. But ultimately, they are showing you that they think that you have an abundance of choices, which is really, really a positive thing. So the question is, how do we show non-neediness? Well, demonstrating high value is important. The word is demonstrate in that phrase, not explain. If you are trying to explain that you have high value, you come across as what's called qualifying yourself, like trying to give you a reason why people should like you. If you don't have a good reason and you think you need to say it, then you're going to come across like you're trying to convince people that they should like you. This is like name dropping, talking about how not awesome your car is, how much money you have, all the crap that women find totally annoying. You can say all those things, but you can't say them in a way, you can't say them because you want people to like you. If you say them because you want people to like you, it means that you don't actually have a lot of women liking you, which means you think you need to go ahead and sell yourself to people, which means that you're not pre-selected, you're not pre-qualified. So that's important. You want to make sure you demonstrate that quality and not explain it verbally. What you want to basically show them is the following. You want them to get this out of your body language. Again, if you haven't seen the 5-week body language mastery course, check that out, and you'll figure out how to do this in very much detail. Plus, I have a little section dedicated to this in the Tao of Badass, so if you need to review it, go ahead. But essentially, you're going to be saying, subconsciously, I'm used to interacting with women like you, and I don't need you to like me in order to make myself happy, in order to prove, that I'm an attractive guy. So I'm used to interacting with women like you, meaning attractive women, right? I'm used to interacting with attractive women. This is normal. And I don't need you to like me in order to feel okay. Another thing I might add to that is the sort of phrase afterwards that is, but I am enjoying this, so, and I'm interested, and I think that you're cool. So at that point, if they ever stop being cool, you won't put up with stuff that you don't like, in which case you won't get trampled all over, walked all over, and sort of made fun of or looked down on by women. So The reason why we show demonstrate value instead of trying to explain it is because your verbal language runs through your logical brain. Meaning, if you try to explain it to somebody, you're appealing to her logical brain. You're not appealing to her emotional brain. Her logical brain is not where attraction lives. Her attraction lives in her emotional brain. So instead of trying to sort of appeal to her logical brain and quote-unquote convince her that you're attractive, you want her to just feel attractive. And you sort of get a system or a sense of this. For example, if you were to ever smell something that was very beautiful, something that reminds you of home, or let's say the universal, you know, semi-universal as a smell can get, but the universal comfort scent is vanilla, meaning that if someone smells vanilla, most of the time, no matter where you are in the country, no matter where you are in the world, people have a positive association with the smell of vanilla. I'm sure if someone was like beaten at a vanilla factory, maybe that wouldn't be the case. That'd be the rare exception to the rule there. But ultimately, that scent of vanilla is a very powerful scent. Now, when you smell it, you automatically feel comfortable. That's because your olfactory sense, the sort of subconscious smell sense that you have, is logging the smell as something that feels good, and then it's automatically releasing this good feeling to your body so you can feel it. Because of that reason, actually, I used to wear vanilla scented lotion all the time, because I didn't want it to be too overbearing. I want it to be so that whenever women got close to me, they felt comfortable being close to me. I wasn't wearing it to attract them, because the attraction scent is not going to be necessarily vanilla. It's going to be something more spicy, something more curious, you know? Just not dog shit, essentially. And I guess dog shit could be attractive to some people. I don't know. To dogs, maybe. But ultimately, I have... I used to use vanilla as my lotion, and it was a very powerful vanilla scent for me. And it would do two things. It would make me comfortable when I went out, because I would be smelling vanilla while I was out. And it would make women who got close to me very comfortable and relax and not so guarded. And so in a place that's very close-quartered, like a bar or a club or any place, like a party, or as soon as someone gets closer to you and they get comfortable enough to get closer to you, it works in your favor. And in the same way, you want to affect that emotion to sort of pop up in a woman sort of unexpectedly without any real way to fight that emotion. Attraction, you know, David D'Angelo's famous quotation here is, attraction is not a choice. And I do agree to the person who's being attracted. You know, attraction is not their choice. They cannot help but be attracted to you. Now, you can control who you're attracted to on a large scale. If you actually decrease your insecurity level, you will be attracted to certain other types of women. But that's sort of another story. Ultimately, you don't really have a choice about whom you're attracted to as well on a short-term scale. So if you can get in and become that man and cause those kind of effects, then, you know, in a woman, those sort of feelings of attraction, then you will uncontrollably to her, you'll uncontrollably attract women in general. So, you know, we trust our instincts when it comes to those emotions. So just in general, if you want to demonstrate high value, one great way to do that is to banter. Now, banter demonstrates high value because it is showing people that you don't need to have a serious conversation in the beginning. You're not trying to rush into rapport. It sort of puts a placeholder for your mouth while your body language is doing the actual talking here. You'll be using a lot of negative body language, meaning that you won't be turning your body directly toward her until the conversation progresses and she starts being playful back. Like, your chest won't be facing her directly, maybe just your head. You know, your body language will be dominant, powerful. Again, if you do have, actually, out of the people on the call, raise your hand if you don't have the 5-week body language mastery course. If you don't have that course, raise your hand on the call and let me see who you are. You should have access to it. You can press *2 to raise your hand. If you're on the web, then I don't know how to do that. But if you don't have that, raise your hand, press *2 and let me know. I'm going to hook you up with it. So, since you're on this call, can you make a note to that? You are right now? Okay. Perhaps making a note. So if you don't have it currently in your members area, I'll hook you up with it so you can get it. Check it out. You'll also have in your members area something called the banter line cheat sheet. And I just have a bunch of banter lines that I've used in the past that work really well in certain situations. It's an ongoing sort of running list that we will update over time. So you'll get, you have access to that forever in every version of it. And you can log on there and you can see some. I would suggest you just write a few down and keep them in your back pocket, literally. Put them in your back pocket when you go out so that if you run out of stuff to say, you can just say one of the banter lines and it'll come out and it'll be silly and funny and playful. The reason why it's good to know, I wouldn't say you don't want to use that unless you have to, but if you have to, it's a good thing to have, you know, to have sort of memorized. One of my favorites was "Your Trouble." That was one of my favorite ones of all time. Like, "Oh, your trouble, get out of here. I don't want to get in any trouble today." You know, that kind of thing. And smiling while you're saying it. If you do this, you'll get a very positive response. And I've actually tried, I've said this a bunch of different ways, and I've found ways not to say it. One time I accidentally said, "You're going to get me in trouble," which immediately the girl says, "Why, do you have a girlfriend? Why are you flirting with me if you have a girlfriend?" It's like, no, that's not what I meant. I was single. You know, I meant "you're trouble," you know, you're, and she was like, automatically we started off the interaction arguing, and I was like, "I'll be back. I'm just going to go somewhere else for a little while, and I'll come back later and try this again." So it's very specific in the way that I've worded everything. I got a, you know, someone on here now that doesn't have it. If you can't put your hand up, that sucks. I'm not sure if you're online and you're trying to get a question, you can put in the Q&A box. If you're actually listening to this online, you can go in there and you can, in the Q&A box where you can ask a question, let me know that you don't have access to the 5-week Body Language Mastery course and I'll hook you up with it. I also have the Subliminal Inner Confidence MP3s that I'll hook you up with too, which are really great. So ultimately, really powerful stuff, really cool body language stuff in there. And it's very, very important. Your body language should literally do 80% of your attraction work for you. You shouldn't have to say anything. You know, and you want to stay in this spot. You want to stay in the space of attraction, the space of banter and lightheartedness until it's time to go into rapport. And when it is time to go into rapport, we'll go into sort of how to tell when women are attracted to you and when to go from one stage to the next stage in a future call, because it's going to take a long time. That'll take all day, an entire call to do that. But we'll go into that later. But ultimately, when it is time to go into rapport, then you want to go into the next stage of attraction, the final stage, the stage that most guys skip over, and that is qualifying. So the final stage here in attraction is qualifying. And qualifying is essentially, like I said, the most overlooked stage in the matter of interaction. But essentially what it is, is that it is allowing a woman to chase you for a moment in order to get you. Once you chased her, you show an interest, you flirted, then she needs to chase you just a little bit before you move forward. Otherwise, she will not appreciate the attraction. The attraction will die off faster. You can test this if you want to. Let's think about this. If you can't see the matrix yet, if you can't walk into a place and tell who's in what stage and know what stage you're in when you're talking to a woman, assume you're in the qualifying stage. This is probably the best thing to do. Walk up and immediately start trying to qualify her. As you understand a little bit better, you don't want to do this. You want to stay in attraction longer because you'll be able to, you know, really build, ramp up the attraction like crazy. But if you don't have that ability yet, you want to sit in the qualifying stage. And essentially what happens here is a woman will begin to sort of sell herself to you, so to speak. And as she starts to convince you to like her, she becomes more and more solidly in a concrete way, becomes more and more attracted to you. And the reason why this happens is because she's going through the physical motions that she would be going through to a guy that she's attracted to. Now, I can explain the power behind that. The power behind going through the motions is that once you start to go through the motions of something, your emotional brain begins to align with those motions that you're doing. For example, if you smile, your emotional brain releases smile endorphins, right? Makes sense. In yourself, so it releases those positive feelings in you. If you begin to stand up straight and broaden your shoulders, you automatically feel more powerful. You feel that emotion comes up. If you, for example, make like a couple of fists like you're in a box and you start to kind of punch like shadow box in the air, you'll automatically start to get a feeling of like adrenaline boosts of aggression, a little bit of aggression, a little bit of adrenaline pumping through your system. Now, the reason why this happens is because your body remembers movements and your emotions attach to those movements. So when your body goes through a certain amount of movements, then you automatically start to associate a feeling with that over time. And the only time a woman is trying to convince a guy that she's attractive is whenever she's really, really attracted to the guy that she's doing this to. And so it's sort of sneaky, but what will happen is as she starts to sell herself to you over time, then she becomes more and more and more and more attracted to you. And so even if she's not attracted to you in the beginning, by the time she's done sort of answering your questions or qualifying yourself, she will be attracted to you. That's sort of a powerful thing to know. So I go into the questions qualifier often. I think that's one of the easiest ways to do this. But the truth is that women will naturally qualify themselves if you're doing banter and body language properly. So if you are using negative body language properly and you are just sort of getting sort of your banter down and your dominant body language properly as well, then you will automatically have women qualify themselves to you. Now what this looks like is it'll be a total non sequitur that you'll hear. So she'll be talking about something with you and then all of a sudden she'll drop something that seems completely asinine and unimportant, but is bragging about something completely unrelated. So that would be something like we're talking and we're having a good time, we're laughing, and she'll say, you know, I did go to college and I did graduate from Stanford. And then you'll go, and then you know, most guys would go, so? No, that doesn't impress me. Whatever. Like, that's not our natural reaction. But we don't know that we're doing, we don't know what we're doing when we do that. Whenever we do say, so, who cares? What we're actually doing is we are shooting them down for the one thing they think that makes them valuable. And that is not good at all. Essentially, what happens there is then women will automatically think that the one positive thing they have to offer you is not good enough and they should leave, you know. And that's very, very shitty because then they think that you don't like them and so they split or they self-sabotage or they start, you know, testing you a ton because they feel like crap and so they try to get you to feel the same way. Typically, when someone makes us feel like shit, we want empathy or sympathy. We'll go for sympathy first. If that doesn't work, we'll go for empathy. Meaning, sympathy means you understand how I feel, you know. Empathy means you're feeling it with me. You know, and if you're not, if you don't give them the sort of sympathy of, oh my God, it's awesome. I understand how awesome that shit, that must be. And I really appreciate that quality. If you don't do that and you don't give them that sympathy, then they're going to get that empathy out of you that you make them feel like shit, so you're going to feel like shit now. And that will happen a lot. So you don't want that to happen. Instead, you want the interaction to go well and you want it to you know, end up with you guys making out, obviously. So whenever someone does, a woman does throw that sort of total sideways, unexpected, non sequitur brag at you, then instead of having a natural reaction of going, so that's fucking stupid, you want to go, oh, that's really awesome. That's cool. I appreciate that. And then you can go ahead and qualify her again if you want to, you know. Quite like I said, the questions qualifier is probably the best one that I've found, a pretty standard one. There's a more advanced one called self-fulfilling prophecy qualifier, which I outline in the book, in the Dial Badass. But ultimately, the questions qualifier is basically as such. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. You're talking about whatever you're talking about, you're bantering, and then you sort of let there be a break in the banter for a second where you're both kind of just smiling, and you go, you know, you're awesome. You're pretty cool. And there's a lot of women here, and I could be talking to any of them, but I'm talking to you because this is fun. I'm having a really good time. There's just something about you that's really exciting and interesting to me. I'm curious what your take on this would be. What do you think are your three most positive dominant qualities? What would number one be? If you had to name your three most positive dominant qualities, what would the first one be? Right. So then she starts to name them off. Oh, well, I'm smart and I'm, you know, funny and I'm feisty, right? Whatever. And you'll get these three qualities. Now you have to essentially accept her for these qualities and then you're ready to go into rapport. That's it. You're done. You don't have to do anything else. You're good. You've accepted her for the three things that she thinks are her best qualities. You think they're awesome too. In her mind, she's like, I'm worthy now, and I can move forward. It may be kind of crazy to think that a girl will be thinking, oh, I'm not worthy for this guy. But as you build this high value and you're demonstrating this value and you're bantering, you're building attraction, you'll become kind of like a god to women. Now, that's good because you have power over your situation, but bad because women can't sleep with a god. You know, they sleep with real guys. So you have to sort of come down to earth after that and be real with them and build that rapport. Otherwise, they'll psych themselves out over and over again. And they won't feel like they have any substance with you. So I've tested this every way but sideways. I've tested this one sideways too. But ultimately, it's very, very important that you accept them for that. Now, the self-fulfilling prophecy qualifier sort of plays on an idea that I actually recently discovered in a book called Influence by a guy named Cialdini, C-I-A-L-D-I-N-I. And Cialdini wrote in this book called Influence about a concept called consistency. And this is whenever we feel accepted for something, for a quality, we tend to display that quality immediately. And so the self-fulfilling prophecy qualifier is essentially the consistency qualifier. And basically what it does is if we accept somebody for a quality, as long as that this process isn't overtly obvious, if we accept somebody for a quality and they agree to, you know, say thank you, they accept that that we accept them for that, they accept that we like that, and accept that they have that quality, then they are exponentially more likely to show that quality around you. So if you could accept a woman's naughty side, let's say, when you first meet her, and really embrace that sort of sexy, let's say slutty part of a woman, then you can imagine that if women are accepted for that quality and they feel like they can do that around you, and the rule of consistency is playing in your favor, you're going to be surrounded by women who aren't normally as open sexually as they are around you, meaning that they'd sleep with you on the first date, they would sleep with you with other women, they'd be open to an open relationship. I'm sort of the master of that process because I had I was polyamorous for a long time, and several times, and I was I date several women at the same time, and they were all very happy with the process. So I had to use all these sort of psychological rules of consistency and things to keep people happy. Now, what Cialdini found was that when you hold someone to a consistency standard, meaning that you accept them for something, and then they live into that quality, they're actually happier with that state than they were otherwise. So they'll actually be happier around you. They explore parts of themselves that they aren't usually allowed to. They did this one study where they took a group of people, and they sent out a letter to this group of people before the internet. And they said, well, hey, look, we're doing a study in your area. And not a study, sorry. We're doing a contest. And we're watching people's consumption of energy. And they said, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to at the end of the month, we're going to tally up. And anybody who's saved money on their energy this next month will get their name published in the newspaper. Right? So they watched everybody, you know, and they get their name published in the newspaper as an energy aware or greenhouse, right? You know, like a energy aware family, and they'd get their name, you know, published. And it's like, oh, some prestigious thing for a neighborhood, right? So they did this test, and they watched people. So the next month, they checked the energy bill, and everyone's energy bills were drastically lower, right? So then they did something interesting. They took half the group, and they said, okay, well, I'm sorry, but we actually can't publish your names in the newspaper. We actually just ran into a problem. We can't do that. Sorry about that. I know we said we would, but we can't. And the other group, they said, okay, we're going to publish your names in the newspaper. Look for it next month. You know, comes out on this date. And then they waited a month. And the surprising thing in this process is that at the end of the second month, the people who had gotten denied their name being published in the paper, meaning the reason why they did it in the first place, they actually saved more than the previous month. They kept going, their energy kept, consumption kept going down. And the people who were getting their names published went right back to overconsuming again. So this is really strange. Essentially what this means is that once we're accepted for something, and you know, we don't necessarily get public recognition for it, not everybody knows it, we're actually more bound to the idea of living with that standard. So in the case where they didn't actually publish anyone's names in the newspaper, the people who did it couldn't say, well, I did that so I could get my name published. They had to say, well, I did get my name published and I did it anyway, so I must be I must be a family that conserves energy. I must be like a green family, you know, energy aware family. That's who we are. It's this kind of people that we are. So you don't even have to deliver is the point on whatever the concept is, whatever the quality is. You don't even need to see that quality. In fact, later on you could say, you know, I could have been wrong about that. I haven't seen you show that quality in a while since I first saw you. And they'll be more likely to show you that quality, not less likely. So this works in your favor and theirs. They'll be more open, more comfortable, and happier with what they have, you know, i.e. you, And they'll be, you know, open around you. And I found the best quality to sort of call out is openness and willingness to try new things, because that's like, you know, a pretty obvious leap from there to, you know, having sex with a horse or whatever.
And that's what it's all about.
And that's what the Thou of Badass is all about. So ultimately, that's the self-fulfilling prophecy qualifier, why it works in a nutshell. And essentially, you can bring it up by just saying a quality that you appreciate in them and giving yourself a backdoor. Like I said, I give a script, a very specific script in the Thou of Badass. You can read over it, and I'll send that to you. I don't need to send it to you. You already have it. So read the Thou of Badass and get the script there, and you'll know what to say to women whenever you're in the situation. We've got about 5 more minutes, guys, here. That was the end of the attraction section. I'm kind of surprised that I got through the whole first stage there. That was the end of this one. We have about 5 more minutes. If you do have a question, though, or a comment or anything, press *2 now, and we'll go ahead and get on those questions and those comments. I did see a hand or so raised earlier about the 5-week body language mastery course. We'll hook you up. If you did raise your hand, we will hook you up. But if you have a question now, it's time to press *2 and go ahead and do it. And, you know, we got about 5 more minutes, so we can take a question. And if you are thinking about doing it, do it, because I don't see any hands up right now. So out of all everybody on the call, nobody's putting their hand up. It's kind of groupthink right now. Like, well, someone's going to put their hand up. No, they might ask the question that I want to ask. Okay, there we go. We got somebody. All right. We don't have enough time for your question. I'm sorry. I'm joking. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and unmute you here. Let's see if I can take care of this. You there, Brett?
Yeah, I'm here.
Ooh, you are sure are there.
I was. Brad caught my attention when he was talking about the smiles and the endorphins it releases, and it popped in my head. It'd be so amazing to walk up to a woman and just start letting her know about that, and just seeing where I could take that as a into opening or bannering with women.
You know what's funny is that things like this are awesome for talking to women about. A lot of guys kind of hide this fact that they study this stuff and they never reveal it to women, but women find this absolutely fascinating. But whenever you do deliver it, I would suggest this one thing, Brett. When you do walk up, there are different parts of your voice, and if you use your seduction voice, your sort of diaphragm-based voice, and you slow down your speech and you pause. So for example, if I had to like do a rendition of it right here, it might be something like, I don't know if you know this or not, but when someone smiles at you, you release the same amount of endorphins in that person as if they've just eaten 2,000 bars of chocolate. This has been proven. You know, and so this sort of like sort of empty space that's sucking their attention in, and this sort of deeper, more comfortable, calm voice. And if you look her directly in the eyes and you get pretty close to her so she can hear you in that moment, you can actually skip through the stage of attraction and rapport if you do that. And you can talk about anything. I've talked about the stupidest shit in the universe. You know, did you know that the male gecko spends his entire life in search of one female? You know, like totally, that's bullshit, by the way. Don't say that. But ultimately, it doesn't matter what you're saying, because your body language is doing all of the talking here. And because you're in that seductive space and you can draw them into your world, you're sort of allowed to, you know, you're seeing the matrix here. You can skip stages. You can quote unquote dodge bullets, and you can jump straight to the stage of seduction and actually have it work. But later on, you have to go back and do all the work to build the rapport and stuff like that too. But ultimately, it's better to go through the stages one at a time. But yeah, absolutely. And you know, you can do it in a seductive way. If you want to walk up and be lighthearted with somebody, I would actually not use this as the first thing that you say if you're going to be lighthearted. I would say something else first, like, hey, you girls are fun. I'm going to come hang out with you, you know? Well, you're smiling and stuff. You're laughing. You know, I don't know if you know this or not, but if you smile, there's a study, I guess, recently, and I read about it. And smiling actually releases more, someone who smiles at you, releases more endorphins than if you find $25,000 in cash. Isn't that crazy? You know, so like this is something you can just deliver to them, you know, as part of a conversation.
Wow. You'd be like, perfect, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great smile.
That's a great smile. I'll take $25,000. No, but ultimately though, that's a great idea, Brett. Absolutely.
Yep.
Is that it?
Yeah, that's all I had.
Okay. Okay, good. All right. Well, thanks for sharing. Ultimately, guys, this is the attraction phase. I really want you to, though, your homework is to get out and apply some of these concepts. Your goal is to see the matrix when it comes to attraction. In most social situations, you're going to be, especially social sexual tension situations where it's like bars and things like that, everyone's going to be in the stage of attraction trying to get to rapport. If you can see what stage you're in, it'll just snap for you. All of a sudden, you'll be able to go, oh my God, okay, well, let me try demonstrating high value then, and bantering, then banter, and watch the response. Like, holy shit, it's like, oh my God, it's like putting gas in a car and then trying to turn it on. You know, it works. It works very, very well. So try it out and see what you think and get back to us here. And in the next call, we're going to be coaching you through all your responses, coaching you through the same concepts, and really helping you hone down and apply these concepts to your everyday interactions. I hope you gained a lot from this call. Thanks for being on it, Brad, as well.
I have one quick thing.
Well, we don't have time for that. Cinema. No, I'm just kidding. No, go ahead.
No, you started talking about your different voices, and you actually go into really good depth in the 5-week body language mastery course.
All right, that was the bonus week that I put on. That was the 6th webinar, and that's all available for you. And like I said, if you raised your hand earlier, I'll hook you up with that, and you can check it out. A lot of great information in there. So anyway, guys, thank you so much for checking this out. I'm proud to be here with my founding members, obviously, and to take it to the next level. Any questions you have whatsoever, feel free to hop into the members area, post them. We'll be able to actually respond back now. It's working. It's looking great. So hang out in there, check it out, communicate. We'll be sharing a lot of stuff in there, and I will be catching you on the flip side. I'll see you next week on Thursday, which is the 11th, so write that down. Thursday 11th, same time, and we'll be going over similar topics, talking about attraction and really going into a lot of detail then and helping you sort of take it to the next level. All right, talk to you guys soon. Take care. I'll see you next week.